I'm Bill Hemmer.
I'm Dana Perino.
I'm Chris Wallace, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. He might be the focus of an impeachment trial, but the president is thousands of miles away at a World Economic Forum in Switzerland, where he's talking up himself and the U.S. economy.
So he's got a lot to not only brag about, but to say, I did it my way, and it's working.
I'm Dave Anthony. More Americans are beating cancer. The rate of patients dying continues to fall.
We have now turned cancer into a devastating diagnosis, but one that can be treated as a chronic illness, such as high blood pressure.
I'm Liz Peek. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
While the impeachment trial might make President Trump the focus of Washington, D.C., he is not in D.C. He's in Davos, Switzerland, for the World Economic Forum, a space where he's highlighting the U.S. economy.
When I spoke at this forum 2 years ago, I told you that we had launched the Great American Comeback. Today, I'm proud to declare that the United States is in the midst of an economic boom, the likes of which the world has never seen before.
With the recent U.S. signing of Phase 1 of the China deal and the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal, which replaces NAFTA, the president told the crowd at Davos he's created an inclusive economy. Davos brings together what some have called the elite, leaders of countries, the heads of major corporations, investors. This year's theme of Davos is stakeholders for a cohesive and sustainable world, and climate change is a big part of the discussion. While the president's been criticized by world leaders and here at home for relaxed environmental regulations, the president didn't get into it, except to say that clean air and water are important.
To embrace the possibilities of tomorrow, we must reject the perennial prophets of doom and their predictions of the apocalypse.
While in Davos, the president is also meeting with the Iraqi and Swiss presidents, the Prime Minister of Pakistan, and the European Commission president. Now, despite Tuesday's drop in the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ, overall the market's been rallying lately. Last Thursday, the Dow hit a record high, despite impeachment efforts.
Well, I wouldn't say Wall Street doesn't care about impeachment.
Charles Payne is the host of Making Money on Fox Business.
But Wall Street, or the stock market, has an amazing ability to look through all the minutiae. So the headlines that might move the masses, unless Wall Street thinks it's going to lead to something, it will not react to it. If they thought there was a greater smoking gun, there was an actual chance of a constitutional crisis, that you would get enough senators to vote President Trump out, I think you see a lot different reaction from the stock market. So right now the focus is on what's factual and the trends that we've got going.
I know the folks that make the calls and do the buying and selling, they have a lot on their plate, right? They're not necessarily DC type reporter mindset mode, right? They're considering a global picture. How much do the politics of the day and what's coming out of DC and Congress and the White House, how much consideration does that get? I imagine it's an ebb and flow, but it's got to be on their minds.
It's always on their minds. You know, the access between Wall Street and Washington, D.C. is amazing. Look at these cabinets. It's typically chock full of Wall Streeters, and then they leave the White House and they go to Wall Street and vice versa. And of course, I mean, policy, the laws, the rules, the regulations, the tax policy, all of that has implications for trillions of dollars. Wall Street's always paying attention, especially during election years. I can tell you right now, for instance, if we're a month away from the election and there's a candidate, Sanders, and he's leading President Trump in the polls by double digits, the stock market's going to be down. So it's paying attention.
If the Fed announced an interest rate change, like right now, would that probably have a far bigger impact than an impending impeachment trial? And is it just about this idea that, look, it doesn't look like the Senate, with its Republican majority, will impeach?
Well, first and foremost, it doesn't look likely that there will be a conviction. So Wall Street's okay. They've already checked that box. But you're absolutely right. The Federal Reserve, if they came out of left field and said, hey, we're going to hike rates, that would have a very detrimental impact to the stock market. All you have to do is look back to October 3rd, 2018. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was at an all-time high, 26,000. I think it was 26,858, something like that. And we were on our way. And then Jay Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve, made sort of an off-the-cuff remark about hiking rates and saying that they had a long way to go and they were going to keep hiking rates. Now, remember, at this point, there'd already been three interest rate hikes that kind of ruffled Wall Street's feathers. Yeah. We were still going up, but that was the peak. That was the absolute all-time high of the market, and we went into something akin to a death spiral that was climaxed on the Christmas Eve, a half a day in the market, massive sell-off just a couple of days after the Fed had hiked rates for the fourth time in 2018. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just the idea that the Fed was hiking rates, but why? There was no real reason. Wall Street couldn't grapple with the idea while the rest of the world was cutting rates that Jay Powell was operating from an old set of rules, if you will, that suggested he should be doing something that was hurting the economy and making us less competitive in the world. The good news is early in January, I think it was January 30, gave a speech somewhere, and he essentially said, hey, wage inflation does not automatically mean price inflation, hinting that they would tear up the old rule book and try all over again.
It's interesting because that's sort of the White House thinking right now as the president is at the Davos Economic Forum, that that sort of difference between the U.S. economy and the world economy is something that the White House would like to highlight at Davos. It's probably a good optic, right? Business carries on. He's the president doing presidential things as an impeachment trial, begins. What sort of reception do you think he's receiving at Davos now that he's been president for 3 years, that, you know, they have a body of evidence now in which to judge this president?
Yeah, but President Trump, yeah, I love when he went to Davos the first time. I think it was January 26th of 2018 when he essentially challenged or took on the world's elites. I chaired. I thought it was phenomenal that he went there on their home turf with their scores of private jets and their hypocrisy about caring about climate and not caring about profits. And he took them on. And so it was interesting because they were enthralled with him, right? I mean, it was like a superstar walking amongst everyone else. And even though he sort of tried to crash their party with a completely different message, they loved the fact that he was there. So he does give it a certain level of gravitas. And by the same token, he gets to go back now and say, hey, by the way, I did it my way. I didn't listen to the experts. You know what? We put tariffs on China. In fact, we have tariffs right now on $370 billion worth of goods. You know what didn't happen? Smoot Hawley. Our unemployment rate did not go to 25%. Our economy, our GDP did not go down 50%. We did not get into an economic death spiral. On the contrary, we've got almost 7 million jobs opened. We've got unemployment at the lowest rate since December of 1969. We've got household formation. We're on a cusp, and this is mostly my opinion, but the recent data backs me up. Of a housing boom, home ownership at the best place it's been since early 2014. So he's got a lot to not only brag about, but to say, I did it my way and it's working.
Is impeachment distracting at all to the other world leaders who are engaging with our president? Like, do they consider him weaker or more vulnerable because of that? Like you said, in 2018, he was the superstar. Now he's facing a bigger battle at home.
They may say that. I've seen some headlines that have suggested that. But could you imagine that anyone would think that a wounded President Trump was any weaker? And he, by the way, I don't think he's wounded. But even if you were to make that analogy, and let's not forget, most of these folks have a lot of problems at home. If you look at the approval rating for Macron, Angela Merkel's on the way out. The guy in Canada is barely getting by with scandal after scandal.
You're saying by comparison.
By comparison. Listen, the last time the world leaders got together and there was this video of them mocking President Trump, I thought it was interesting, right? Because the next day Canada's jobs numbers came out. So did ours. And they lost 71,000 jobs that month. This was about 2 months ago. Equivalent of us losing 500,000 jobs in a single month. Could you imagine a world leader snickering at anyone else when their economy was doing that bad?
The president didn't attend Davos last year, but in 2018, he told the leaders who'd gathered that America first does not mean America alone. I imagine now he'll point, as proof of that statement to something like the USMCA. What else might he point to say, look, we do need partnerships?
Well, we have the China trade deal. We have the USMCA. He was never against trade deals that I understood. He was against these big, gigantic, lumbering you know, with 20 nations, 30 nations, the kind of things where you never get anything done. You know, he wants us to have independent trade deals with every country on the planet, that, from what I understand. So, and it's easier to influence those trade deals. It's easier to get things done. It doesn't become a bureaucratic nightmare or something where, you know, where one nation can hold out everyone, you know. So, hey, guys, everyone's almost on board, but Chile, you know, they want a little bit more. It's like, okay. So it's you know, there's this sort of misnomer that we're pulling away or we're creating a vacuum in the world because we don't want to leave, you know, tens of thousands of troops in the Middle East as sitting ducks, or we don't want to pay all of NATO's budget. And I think it's the exact opposite. And what's really intriguing is as they were announcing and signing the China trade deal, the United States, the European Union, and Japan went to the World Trade Organization, united, and said we'd like to make significant changes on the idea of China or any nation subsidizing industrial production. So, you know, the idea that he had to rally the troops before the fight would have never happened. But now that these other nations are seeing it as win, they're getting behind it. Listen to the guy in charge of NATO. You know, he's very complimentary of President Trump.
Finally, Charles, Democrats have said they don't think this president is that strong on the economy. Of course, we know President Trump says it's, you know, his biggest sort of victory, and he touts it and highlights it on Twitter all the time. But, you know, for example, Tom Steyer has said as a billionaire, he can take on President Trump. And former Mayor Pete Buttigieg has said, you know, people don't measure their success at home by how well Wall Street is doing. And I imagine, you know, in the minds of many, that's a fair statement. I know wages are increasing a bit now, but they historically really haven't kept pace with the cost of living increases over the past several decades.
Right. Well, you just answered the question. Wages, which had not historically kept pace of inflation, are now outrunning inflation. And it's the bottom leg rungs of the economic ladder which are seeing faster wage increase. In fact, wage increases for non-whites is so much faster than whites. I just looked at the data. It's the greatest it's ever been in over five decades. Blue-collar wage growth is significantly above supervisor wage growth. In fact, it's been that way every month since September of 2018, except one. So if you're arguing for shared prosperity, this is as shared as it's been in a long, long time. So voters are going to have to decide, okay, so Tom Steyer is a billionaire. He's a billionaire because he manages money for millionaires and billionaires, and he invested a lot of money in coal. How does that translate to me? Michael Bloomberg is a billionaire, but he made it from a machine that sells proprietary research to Wall Street. You know, when he was mayor of New York City, when he left, only 26% of third to eighth graders were proficient in math and about 30% in reading. So, you know, if you're telling me that you're for the underdog, you're the champion of the underdog, either most of them don't have any true experience of that, of ever even doing that. And if they have a track record, it's not something I would point to. And Pete Buttigieg is bragging that he's not a millionaire. Well, you know, that's fine. You know, not everyone's going to be a millionaire, but, you know, and where are you?
But everybody wants to be.
Let's look at his town. I don't think he ever wants us to take a real close look at South Bend, because it's been a real disappointing place, particularly for black people and others. I mean, it is a really sad blight on otherwise amazing economic revival in America.
Charles Payne, thank you so much for your time.
You got it.
This is Liz Peek with your Fox News commentary coming up.
In 2020, it is estimated 1.8 million Americans will be diagnosed with cancer. It's also estimated about 600,000 people in the U.S. will die from cancer. And while that sounds like a lot and is a lot, it's less than it used to be. The American Cancer Society reports cancer death rates have dropped 29% from 1991 to 2017, with the biggest annual decline in the U.S. from 2016 to 17, and that drop, 2.2%.
Is that surprising to me? No, I hope. We have to be able to show some benefit for what we've been doing.
Dr. Nicole Sapphire is a Fox News contributor and also a radiologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center.
This shows such an improved knowledge that we really are starting to understand cancer biologics. It's not just a matter of someone has been diagnosed with cancer and we're going to throw everything we can at them in terms of toxic chemotherapy. Now we really understand how cancer develops, why it develops, and how it's growing. So we're having more of precision-based medicine and treatments for cancer.
Right. We're not getting cures because that doesn't happen, but we're getting more patients who are successfully, everyone talks about beating the cancer.
Well, so to be fair, we are curing some cancers. And actually, in the last couple of years, CAR-T, which is a treatment for childhood leukemia, is curing cancer. We have now turned cancer into a devastating diagnosis, but one that can be treated as a chronic illness, such as high blood pressure, meaning there are people walking and talking around with metastatic cancer. You wouldn't know it, but they are on maintenance treatment. It's not a death sentence anymore for a lot of people when they get that cancer diagnosis. And for me, that is a major win. People are living with cancer for so long that they're dying from something else, some sort of natural causes.
Metastatic, what does that mean?
So metastatic cancer means that the cancer itself has gone from where it originally formed elsewhere in the body. So let's take breast cancer, for example. Breast cancer forms in cells within a breast. Men and women can get breast cancer. It metastasizes when it goes to lymph nodes. It can be local lymph nodes, so in like the armpit, or it can go to the liver, it can go to the bones, it can go to the brain, it can go to a plethora of places. And I have patients who are living with metastatic cancer for decades. Olivia Newton-John, she's someone herself who has metastatic breast cancer, and she is still living to talk about it. Alex Trebek, he has pancreatic cancer, and that he is still hosting Jeopardy.
And pancreatic cancer is one of those that you hear about, and you're like, oh boy, that's close to a death sentence. People think that.
Well, pancreatic cancer, the reason it is so detrimental or devastating is because it's hard to detect. One, it's rare, so we don't screen for it with a mammogram or a colonoscopy like we would for breast cancer or colorectal cancer. And so people tend to have more advanced pancreatic cancer once it is diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And at that point, a lot of times it's non-resectable, meaning it can't come out. However, again, we're continuing to advance in our surgical techniques, our radiation, and our chemotherapy, that people are just living longer.
You mentioned leukemia. That is still the number one mortality rate, highest mortality rate in the study that came out for people age 15 to 29. What is leukemia exactly? Why is it so deadly?
Leukemia is a devastating disease that affects the bone marrow. And your bone marrow is so essential to your functioning. It is where your red blood cells and your white blood cells are made. Your red blood cells are your blood and your white blood cells are in your blood, but that's how you fight off infections. And now when you have a cancer wreaking havoc in your bone marrow, there's little you can do, because if you were just to kill all the bone marrow cells, that would kill you.
Right.
So that you can't just do like what you do. So in a liver cancer, you can just cut out that portion of the liver and remove that cancer. You can't do that with leukemia in the bone marrow. So you can kill off the bone marrow and then potentially do a bone marrow transplant, but that oftentimes doesn't work.
And it's painful,
and
too,
it
right?
It can be very painful. Infections are very scary when you have a problem with your bone marrow, and a lot of times people actually die from infections.
Why is it younger people that have a higher mortality rate for that?
Younger people tend to get leukemias. There are several different types of leukemias, okay. And the one that the older patients tend to get is not as aggressive as the one that the younger patients tend to get.
I thought it was interesting that one of the reasons cited for the decline in death rates was there was fewer cases of lung cancer because fewer people are smoking.
So it's twofold why. So lung cancer was the big thing that came out of this study for two reasons. One, fewer people are getting lung cancer, mainly just seen in men, because men tended to have the lung cancers associated with smoking.
Okay.
And occupational exposure. However, women who get lung cancer tends not to be the from smoking type. It tends to be more of a genetic type. And so we have done so much research into our precision medicine, our genomics of cancer through translational type research that we are finding we now have incredible treatments for these lung cancers. We get the cancer specifically. We do DNA testing on it. We find the specific mutations and then we target it. And several of those therapies have come out in the last decade for lung cancers. So not only are we having fewer patients with cancer because of tobacco smoking, but those that really couldn't have done anything to prevent their lung cancer, they're actually surviving longer as well.
And for the patients who are fighting cancers, having a more targeted approach, it helps them, right? Because you're going to have fewer people that lose their hair because of all the chemo in their body.
It is incredible.
All day long.
So historic chemotherapy is blast your body with toxins. And Don't get me wrong, that still works in a lot of patients. You have to do it because you have to get rid of the cancer. But that was the only way we knew how to. So you give them chemotherapy, which not only kills cancer, but it kills a lot of other things. You lose hair. It can cause a devastating long-term side effects.
And you feel terrible.
A lot of people feel awful.
Yeah.
But a lot of times at the end of that, their cancer is gone. So they look back and say it was worth it.
Yeah, right.
Or like my grandmother who died from chemotherapy side effects, they don't make it through it. Right. So we needed to figure out something better. And we did. Now, we have hormones. We have tumor biomarkers that actually turn on your own process to help fight the cancer, your own immunological process. And so these are very different in the sense that they're not targeting everything in your body. It's just focusing on that area of the cancer. Fewer side effects. You feel better. And we're actually finding it works better. Win, win, win all around. It just happens to be a bit more expensive.
Ahead of that American Cancer Society report on declining cancer death rates, there was another story earlier this month in the journal Nature showing artificial intelligence using Google technology could help doctors do a better job reading mammograms. The AI system tested in the study that Google paid for actually performed better than the doctors, with fewer false negatives missing a cancer and fewer false positives, which mistakenly diagnose a cancer. To which Dr. Sapphire replies,
not only am I a radiologist, but I am a breast radiologist. So naturally, I have a large interest in this topic. And my take home is I'm not quitting my day job anytime soon. And let me tell you why. AI, artificial intelligence in radiology, it's already there. And I expect it's only going to continue to grow over the next couple years, decades. It's never going to take over my job. And I'll tell you why. First of all, this study in itself was limited. They essentially took, in the UK, six radiologists who were reading mammograms and compared it to six. In the United States, we have over 300,000 radiologists who do this.
Right.
So it's a very small sample size.
Very small.
Also in the NHS, it's important to remember that they don't have the same dedicated training for subspecialties as we do in the United States. And they're also extremely overworked and they do not, they read a general. So I read just breast for the most part. They're reading everything and also breast. So, you know, I find in the United States, we tend to be a lot more specialized. It was interesting that they found their AI picked up a 3-millimeter, what we call an in situ cancer, which means that there are cancer cells there, but it hasn't invaded or causing any problems yet.
So it's the beginning of it?
It's the beginning of it, which is actually very controversial in the United States because people are saying we're overtreating for in situ cancers and that some of these in situ cancers won't ever actually turn into a problem.
Okay.
So they picked up that 3 mil. That was their big win. Like they picked up this one cancer the radiologist missed. Their AI missed the 3-centimeter cancer that the radiologist picked up. A 3-centimeter cancer has turned it into a stage 2 cancer. And if they were to miss that, it would go to a stage 3, stage 4, and that would kill someone.
It seems to me that this technology would only help your job as opposed to replace you.
So we have something that's called CAD, computer aided detected. And so when I read a mammogram, when I'm finished reading it, you press a little button and little circles will go up on the machine that shows me, oh, you know, the computer thinks that maybe this looks a little asymmetric. And then I look at that a little bit and I'm like, yeah, I guess I see that. And then I'll work that up. Or most of the time I'm like, no, that's nothing. Stop it. Stop it. You're wasting my time.
The worst thing for people is, as you mentioned, detecting cancer too late. Do annual checkups at your doctor, do they usually lead to finding something that's happening? Is that what usually leads to it?
I will say your annual mammogram, your colonoscopy, your lung cancer screening, if you were a smoker, your skin checks, those all lead to early detection of cancer. Going to see your primary care doctor, I find, is extremely beneficial because they're there to manage your care and make sure you're getting those screenings done. You know, you want to be checked for high blood pressure, high cholesterol. You know, one thing that wasn't that was also mentioned in the cancer study was, you know, you were seeing a decline in melanoma and lung cancer primarily due to the new precision medicines and immunotherapies. However, we're seeing progress halting in breast, prostate, and liver, and colorectal. And the reason is those cancers are all increased due to obesity. And as our obesity epidemic is starting to continue to rise in the United States, it doesn't matter how well we're treating our cancers, more people are going to get them because of poor lifestyle behaviors. So you have to go to a primary care doctor because you need someone to call you out on your bad behaviors and making sure everything is in check. Because if you're going to develop cancer, the goal, if you're not doing stuff to prevent it, eating healthy, exercising, not smoking, having sun awareness, if you want to be able to catch it at the earliest possible. And the only way to do that is through effective screening.
Dr. Nicole Sapphire, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, download and listen to the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz. How he picks five stories, most important to the most entertaining to the buzziest. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Liz Peek, what's on your mind?
Here's a heads up. Neither Bernie Sanders nor Elizabeth Warren is going to be elected president. Not this year or anytime soon. Why? Because they want to squelch our personal freedoms, and that is something Americans will always reject. Remember Beto O'Rourke? He found that out the hard way. The former Texas congressman's campaign collapsed when he vowed to take away Americans' guns and restrict our religious freedom. Those policies were anathema to millions, but they're minor league compared to what Sanders and Warren's have in mind. They want to control our lives. They want to decide what kind of house we live in, what kind of car we drive, how we earn our living, and so much more. It's not an exaggeration, and it helps to explain a recent poll which shows the United States taking a surprising and unexpected lurch to the right. In 2019, even as Democrat presidential hopefuls Sanders and Warren rallied millions to their cause, wagging their fingers over income inequality and railing about the downtrodden middle class, Americans walked away from their message by becoming, guess what, more conservative. Gallup reports that the country's multi-decade leftward slide came to an abrupt halt last year, with those self-identifying as liberal dropping from 26% in 2018 to 24% last year. How can that be? One theory, my theory, is that liberalism ascended over the last few decades on the back of issues like same-sex marriage and legalized marijuana, which at their heart tap Americans' respect for individualism and personal freedom. For most, allowing others the right to choose whom to love or whether or not to smoke a joint seems consistent with our country's values. But more recently, liberals have switched from championing our individual rights to limiting them. Ominously, they want big government to determine more and more aspects of our daily lives, controlling everything from health care to housing. Democrats forget that individual freedom is America's single most admired and important virtue. Over time, polling shows respondents rating the U.S. tops in offering the most freedoms compared to other countries. We pride ourselves on giving people the freedom to live their lives as they choose, and most importantly, the freedom to get ahead. That is the backbone of the American dream. Sanders and Warren want to crimp those freedoms. They want to snatch away the opportunity for a grad student to drive for Uber, or rein in the freelance writer who wants to pen articles when and for whom he chooses. They want to decide how an entrepreneur manages her startup, what to pay workers, what hours they're allowed to work. They think that the government is better able to make those decisions than the business owner. This appetite for diktat, for control, is un-American. It has people alarmed, and rightly so. Some of the biggest arguments of our day involve individual freedoms, like gun rights. But some target smaller issues, like whether we can still buy 100-watt light bulbs or dig a pond on our own property. Sanders, Warren, and other Democrats are keen to tell us what America's values are, but they consistently miss the most basic one of all, freedom.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, download and listen to The Untold Story with Martha McCallum. The host of The Story on Fox News Channel sits down with major newsmakers each week to get their untold story. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.